City is Deputy City Attorney Rudolph M. Conrad. Mr. Conrad.
Good afternoon. If it pleases the court, also with me today is Ann Kearney, who assisted the city in its appeal. The law of nuisance plays an important role in Wisconsin's jurisprudence. This court showed its concern for preserving the law of nuisance and ensuring that it's correctly applied in its decision in Physicians Plus. What happened in this case is that the Court of Appeals did not properly apply their holding in Physicians Plus. It made a distinction that's not supported by the record. It held somehow that the city created a nuisance and therefore was not entitled to its ordinary defense of notice. The effect of this decision is to damage, I think, the careful structure that you built up in analyzing the law of nuisance and create a situation where the law of nuisance, when applied in a negligence context, creates a result that is tantamount to absolute liability. And absolute liability.
Let me interrupt for a minute and ask you, how does a court go about, in your opinion, deciding whether a nuisance has been created or merely maintained?
I think that the test for that is a test of knowledge. The idea that you're not entitled to notice because you created the nuisance only makes sense if it's coupled with the idea that the creation itself informed you of the nuisance, that you knew there was a nuisance, that you didn't have to have notice. And that would apply whether you're creating it or maintaining it. If you have knowledge of the fact it's a nuisance, certainly there's no need for notice. But let me give you an example. I don't want to stray too far, but you have a case involving a mink farm. And there a trucker was running his engine loudly. Well, he didn't know that he was injuring the mink farm. He wasn't even being negligent in any sense. He was just running his engine as he ordinarily did. Once the mink farmer told him that the noise was harming the minks, then he didn't stop and say, "What should I do to avoid harming the minks?" Okay? He kept his engine going. Well, the mink farmer collected, not for the injury caused by the initial running of the motor, but for the injury caused that occurred after he was told that he was injuring the minks. So in that sense, once he was told that he was injuring the minks, you could say that he was creating the nuisance.
But Counsel, don't you have to have continuing conduct where you don't have a nuisance anyway? So isn't your argument a little bit circular? Because if this water main had just exploded one time, that was it, nothing. And no other reason. It was a brand new water main, put it in a year ago, and it just exploded for some reason. You wouldn't have a nuisance.
I agree with you. There is no.
Well, you've got to have continuing conduct. So what you're telling us in answer to Justice Crooks's question is that your creation of it lets you know it's ongoing. But if it's not ongoing, you don't have a nuisance anyway, do you?
Well, I agree with you entirely, and if the search commission really posited two scenarios in this case. One was what happened, the facts surrounding the water main break. The second was the entire operation of the water main system. If a water main breaks, we have notice of it, we promptly fix it. Certainly there's no facts in that scenario that would justify any kind of nuisance argument. If we ignored it, we decided not to fix it, we simply let it go day after day, I think that's a different case, but that's not the case here. The other that he posited involves the operation of the entire system. And there you have to ask, why
just stop with him? Are you taking the position here that this was a nuisance that you maintained, not created, or are you not conceding that it was a nuisance at all?
No, it's not a nuisance at all. We neither created or maintained a nuisance.
All right, let's assume now that we find that it is indeed a nuisance. Are you taking the position that you didn't create it, but merely maintained it, and therefore you're entitled to notice?
If you take the position that these facts, either one of the scenarios that are posited, could constitute the maintenance of a nuisance, in order to establish legal liability for the nuisance, which is a different question, you have to, where it's negligence-based, you have to establish the elements of negligence. And the elements of negligence, we know, are duty, breach, causation, damages, and finally public policy considerations. And in your decision in Physicians Plus, you pointed out that there's no liability for negligence-based nuisance unless those elements are met. And here, there's no causation because there was no notice. There was no duty on our part before we had notice. Once we had notice, we fulfilled our duty, so there was no breach. Therefore, the elements of negligence, which are part of the determination whether one is liable for a nuisance, the first determinant as a nuisance, aren't met here. I hope I'm clear on that answer. Following the path of the Court of Appeals will really create a situation where you have an allegation of negligent conduct, but you clothe it in a nuisance argument to strip away, take away the negligence defenses. Well, what has occurred then? You've taken conduct that under ordinary jurisprudence is subject to the ordinary common laws of negligence and turned it into some sort of absolute liability. And absolute liability is rare in the common law. It's reserved for things such as ultra-hazardous activity, where there's a great danger of personal injury and death, such as explosives and so forth. And certainly it's inappropriate to suddenly take water main breaks and move them out of the ordinary common law negligence jurisprudence and associate and treat them the same way as ultra-hazardous activity. Why water? Why not automobile accidents or other activities that are still subject to a fault-based negligence jurisprudence? Simply no logic to somehow treat these differently.
Well, you would, I think, concede, wouldn't you, that you could have a nuisance if it had not been abated immediately. In other words, if it was obvious, actual, or constructively noticed that it had been leaking or causing damage for a substantial period of time.
Right. If you use the nuisance vernacular, if you do not abate after notice, you would have causation of a nuisance. If you use the negligence vernacular, if you do not correct the hazard after notice, you would be negligent because you'd be breaching a duty to correct. That's correct.
Yes, and your main concern is that here there was neither a constructive or actual notice. There was neither one here.
Oh, there's neither one here. That it's conceded that there was no actual notice. And there's certainly no evidence in the record to show constructive notice. Now, these are buried pipes.
Well, I was going to just say that looking at from a factual standpoint, there have been a couple of breaks. I noticed one was 630 feet away, and that was in 88, and then one was 1,000 feet in 89. That's part of the facts. And if one were to... What if the break was, was 3 years before this and it was 30 feet away? Is there a duty to maintain? In other words, you have a system put in a 1926 8-inch cast iron pipe. I think you could take judicial knowledge that it does waste away cast iron rusts. And if the system, so there could you, I could imagine, a condition that would cause perhaps Catholic's scenario. But here, as I read this, it's actually that this was brought back to happen in 99, and basically there was 11, 10 years before, 1,000 feet away, which is, you know, a substantial distance from this. But the argument of the other side as well, you have the duty to maintain, and that's what you do.
Your question is directed to the second part of this argument that talks about the entire system. And there certainly is a duty to maintain, and of course, there's no evidence in the record or no expert opinion that the city has a breach to that duty to maintain. But the city does maintain its water mains. Not only does it maintain them, it has a replacement policy that was developed by our water department engineers, and that's explained in the affidavit of the engineer in the record. First of all, you can say when we bury a pipe to transport water, that's certainly not a negligent act or anything to do with a nuisance. When new pipes are developed, there's no obligation, there's no duty to dig up old pipes and replace them with new pipes. I've never seen that sort of duty in the law. We have a system of monitoring pipe ruptures, and based upon the number of ruptures and other factors that consider that we'll replace 12 miles of pipe a year at the cost of $12 million. Now,
well, you know, it's... I was just going to say, you have the plan, is that if you had an area that was causing difficulty, you would have to go to that area rather than to have just a general plan, wouldn't you? In other words, you're saying you're replacing, but if there were ruptures in a certain area, you would
tell that. We don't necessarily replace them if there's a rupture. Often they're repaired. That's where there's a history of ruptures. Then the decision is made that the pipe should be replaced. Now, what
I think there's a factual dispute between the parties. Did the city used to pressure test the mains, and did that stop taking place around 1996? There seemed to be some disagreement.
No, the city didn't pressure test the mains. What is in the record, there's an article in the record written by an engineer in 1973, I believe, where he recites the pressure testing experiences and what could be learned by pressure testing. But there's no pressure testing being done by the city or other utilities, because it's a very destructive method of testing. It often creates more damage to the pipe than would otherwise occur. And if you read, there's no expert testimony either saying that this is some reliable means of doing it. All there is this article. And if you read the article, you see pressure testing is not practical. You have to inform the public. You have to provide water to water users. You have to hope that the pressure relief valve on the water heater works so it doesn't cause damage to people's water heaters. So that is not established in the record.
I want to make sure that I understand. I thought that I heard you say earlier in response to questions that there is no nuisance unless there is notice. I heard you say that in your response to this mink hypothetical of the noise, and it was only after that they were told, the mink owners were told, that the noise was problematic, that there arose a nuisance. Is that your understanding? Is my statement a correct statement of your position?
Yes, I think it helps. Nuisance is a condition under the law. So
an unintentional condition.
It can be an intentional condition or an unintentional, but if it's unintentional, it has to be the result of negligence. But nuisance is a condition. But in physicians' costs, we explained the analysis you use to determine whether there's liability for nuisance.
So that may be different.
Right. negligence-based nuisance. There cannot be liability for negligence-based nuisance unless notice exists.
Okay, but a nuisance can exist without notice, as opposed to liability for the nuisance.
I feel like a
nuisance could not exist unless there was notice.
Nuisance, in its ordinary sense, is a condition.
Sure.
But it's not enough to say that this condition meets the definition, therefore there's liability. You have to go through the process of the steps of getting to liability.
Now, you earlier, again, I want to make sure I understand, seem to be taking the position that it makes no difference in the law whether it's a creation of a nuisance or a maintaining of a nuisance. Is that your position?
Well, those are compact words dealing with broad topics. I'm going to avoid your question, okay? You could have a situation where someone's accused of maintaining a nuisance, but they're totally unaware of it, okay? If they know that it's a nuisance and they're maintaining it, then they have the knowledge. That's why I thought the better distinction isn't trying to define different types of maintenance, which is pretty confusing, but really talk about knowledge. If you're saying you're maintaining a nuisance in the sense that, well, you know it's a nuisance, you've been told it's a nuisance, and you're still doing it, then obviously you're not entitled to knowledge. But if you're just saying this has gone on for a while and you really, no one's informed you that it's harming someone else's property, you could say you maintained it, but you haven't been told it's a nuisance. So it's you're in the same. That's like the last point I made.
You're really talking about the liability for nuisance.
Right.
Well,
that's my concern. I mean, that's.
Well, the Court of Appeals here makes this dichotomy between.
Right.
And of great import makes the dichotomy between creation and maintenance and the difference between the two with regards to the requirement of notice. And I thought you would be, you know, attacking that. I hear you saying it doesn't make any difference if it's creation or maintenance.
We did not design a sources of a water main system to break on December 9th and destroy their sewer, as they allege. We didn't design it. We designed the system not to break. And we maintained the system not to break. That's what breaks happened. It just says we build roads not to have potholes. Okay? But potholes happen. We build sidewalks not to buckle, but the sidewalks buckle. So I don't see how you can say that building and maintaining a system, roads, sidewalks, water pipes, so that they don't break or have potholes or buckle is maintaining a nuisance. Now,
well, you can't. I mean, you say things happen, problems happen. That's in the passive voice. I always want to say, oh, well, who caused the problem? Why does the problem exist, not just problems happen? And so you can have a cause of action for failing to maintain the road because there are potholes. I mean, potholes happen, but sometimes they happen in a way that gives rise to liability.
That's true, but those actions are under the jurisprudence of notice of the defect and failure to repair. And if you go away from that, where are you putting us? You're putting us right in with explosive and other hazardous activity. You can make us absolutely liable for things that we have no control over. The potholes are caused by weather. The sidewalks buckle because of weather and usage. And water pipes break mostly in three of the coldest months in the winter.
Water breaks. Water pipes can break because they're defectively made or defectively installed. So they break. And if we're in terms of nuisance, then I think you've created a nuisance because you've been negligent in the beginning of putting them in and how they put in. I don't think that's the allegation here. I think that the allegation here is that pipes that are put in properly and manufactured properly with age deteriorate. And that when they deteriorate, last on the average of and fill in 10 years. So every 10 years you do the inspection or do whatever tests are needed to show where the weaknesses are, if any, and plug them. Milwaukee is not undertaking the testing series because of money. They're sort of waiting for it to break, and then they go in and do it, if I understand this record, for the allegations. Right.
Those are the allegations, correct.
But, and they may have been approved,
right.
But we're not at that yet.
I'd make 2 points on that, if I may. First, the record doesn't support those allegations. There's no expert testimony that says that somehow our repair maintenance program is negligently conceived or operated or somehow different, or that another program would have avoided this main break or main breaks in general. So that's simply not in the record. The second point is this entire area of maintaining water pipes, when to replace them. This is a pipe that was 75 years old with an expected life of 125 years. When to replace them, how much money to spend, is all this benefit, excuse me, of discretionary immunity. And the final, well, I have a third point. The other issue, this notion that we should tear out all these pipes and put in new pipes, okay, that would cost $1.3 billion, which would be more than the entire city budget for a year. And this type of argument runs smack against the public policy issue as to whether or not that type of burden, to impose that burden on us, is worth the benefit. So I hope that answers your question.
Could you speak more to your immunity argument, governmental immunity argument?
Well, yes, by the immunity argument, we're speaking about the second part of his argument where he attacks the way we operate the entire system. We know that these public works decisions are a huge part of the expenditure of any municipality. The roads, the sidewalks, the water pipes, sewers, so forth. And how much money is spent to repair these things and how much effort should be spent on this is a discretionary decision. The allocation of money is a purely legislative decision, and the municipal bodies are in the best position to hear what the public wants, to hear how much the public is willing to pay, and make that decision. So even if this court concludes, if I'm not persuading you at all, if you conclude that the way we operate the system, our maintenance is somehow negligent, and discretionary immunity would still preclude liability.
Mr. Conrad, didn't the Court of Appeals base their decision on whether you had or didn't have immunity on the idea that this was a private nuisance? You take issue with that? Are you claiming that if this is a nuisance, it's a public nuisance?
Well, I don't think it makes any difference, because this distinction between public and private, the Court of Appeals addressed that smack, so the old distinction between governmental and proprietary, and that distinction was abolished by Hollett. So in the current state of the law, discretionary immunity applies whether the government is acting in its proprietary or its governmental capacity. The only test is whether or not the nature of the activity is discretionary.
Counsel, I'm going to quote from a jury instruction, Wisconsin Civil Jury Instruction 1922, and it's entitled Nuisance, Municipality Creating or Maintaining. And I'm going to read the second paragraph of that jury instruction, and you tell me if you think it's a correct statement of the law. It reads as follows. You are further instructed that legislative authority granted to a municipality to operate a business, parentheses, operate a sewage system, operate a garbage disposal plant, does not permit such municipality to so operate such business so as to create or maintain a nuisance. I submit that the examples given, operating a sewage system or operating a garbage disposal system, same with the operation of what's going on here with regard to the water system. And I further submit that that paragraph sounds to me like it says there's no immunity. Now, I realize this is not necessarily a binding authority, but a jury instruction says. But I don't know if you've had an opportunity to read it, and if you are able to respond just by hearing it. Do you agree, however, with that statement of law? Do you want me to read it again?
Well, I think the
statement of jury instruction.
You know, jury instruction, the law is not based on jury instructions. Jury instructions is based on the law.
That's what I tried to say in my introductory comments. What I want, though, is do you agree with that statement, or do you disagree with that statement in the second paragraph of the jury instruction?
Well, I think that when it talks about the municipality operating a business, okay, that tells me that the mere use of that term business indicates that this jury instruction is still dragging along with it old distinction between governmental and proprietary operations, which were abolished by this court in Hollitz.
But Hollitz predates at least this, and I'm not saying this is correct, I'm just saying I'm reading the words of it, it's there, and it's a 1990 jury instruction. Hollitz is quite a bit before that.
And I think that, you know, in Hillcrest Golf, you know, you held that in that case, the immunity did not protect the municipality, where the municipality built a sewage system which dumped the sewage or a water system, I forget which dumped it onto their property. And in that case, you had an intentional design of a system where the intended result was to dump it on the property. Here you have the exact case of the creation of a nuisance. And I think you held that immunity doesn't apply in that context. I think that this reflects this. I'm always troubled by the word maintenance because I think maintenance can have several meanings. If it means that you've been told that you're creating a nuisance and you still maintain it, and you continue to do it, that's no different than creating it. So to that extent, I think the instruction is correct. But I don't think the instruction tells us much about how to apply immunity in a negligence-based nuisance, because immunity has been traditionally been a defense, you know, in those areas. And also I think that every discretionary immunity is not absolute. This court has made exceptions for egregious type cases. He made exceptions for willful and malicious conduct, for open and obvious dangers, for ministerial acts, and in the appropriate case, which is not this case, the court can deal with it. But we don't have here a case where we have this intentional design of. And you never look at Hillcrest Golf with immunity, interest golf with immunity were an issue there. I certainly have an argument that what happened there was intentional. And after they were asked to move it, and they didn't, it was willful. And after they were told that you're damaging our property, it was malicious. So immunity would apply in some of these cases, but by its own exceptions, I think would address. We deal with the more egregious cases where it wouldn't be appropriate to apply it. Well, I see my red light is on.
So do I.
Thank you.
Counsel, thank you. You've got 5 minutes of rebuttal. Mr. Peterson.
May it please the court, my name is James Peterson, senior staff attorney with the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District. There's one matter I wanted to discuss right off the bat, and that's the matter covered in my letter to the court on Wednesday, where I point out a typographical error in our statement of issues. That, of course, is our first issue in this case, and that is that this is a private nuisance. It was the first issue raised in the city's request for appeal. Although they didn't brief it, I think it's important that it be recognized and commented upon. The loss that the district suffered was different in kind and degree from the loss suffered by the public in general, in that the public in general did not have to expend a great amount of money. Switch district did, money that was allocated for other purposes and for other needs, and the public was not inconvenienced. We were able to use redundancies in the system to pass the sewage around. So in that sense, using the decided case law as reflected in Costas versus the city of Fond du Lac, it's our position that this is a private nuisance.
This is the difference between a private and public nuisance. Even in a public nuisance, you have that. If you're the one that's suing, you've got to have a special private interest that separates you out from the public. So you've got that because you're a big damage.
I've looked at that way, Your Honor. I do recognize that there's an aspect of many forms of nuisance that can be both acted upon as a private nuisance because the harm is peculiar to the person bringing party bringing the litigation, and there's an aspect that could be a public aspect to it. And I think the older cases, Costas being the private application of it, and the state versus quality egg farm would be the public aspect of it.
Well, what's the difference? Is it who creates the nuisance? Not that, because a private person can create a public nuisance, right?
I think it's the kind and degree of harm that becomes the most important determinant.
I'm sorry, the kind and degree of?
Of harm. Suffer.
Okay, so the bigger the harm, the greater the degree.
Yes.
Public, is that your position?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
The bigger the harm, the more the devastating it is, and the degree of harm, the greater the degree, that's public.
And there's an aspect of it being more individualized in the person who is actually seeking the relief.
And then my next question is, what difference does it make in the law between private nuisance and public nuisance? Would it matter to you if this is called the public nuisance?
It only matters to the district because Physicians Plus was a public nuisance case. And there are certain aspects of it that at least convince one circuit court judge, the circuit court judge in this case, that the notice was an important element of it.
Of what? Of it being?
Of public nuisance. Of public
liability or nuisance.
Liability for public nuisance, yes.
Liability for public nuisance. Okay. Now, what's your position? Did the city create a nuisance? A nuisance is a leaking pipe, right? That's the nuisance.
The nuisance is that artificially collected water has escaped and invaded our property and just destroyed it.
With the leaking pipe.
Through the leaking pipe.
Okay. That's the nuisance. Was this nuisance created by the city, or was it because of its maintenance of the pipe? Or is that a dumb question?
Your Honor, no question you asked. Mr. Conrad share a common view that word maintenance is a slippery term. It's a more slippery term, actually, than nuisance itself. In this particular instance, the nuisance is the invasion. Now, how do we show that there was a cause-effect relationship between that? We've suggested a number of negligence opportunities, but even if those all fail, there's still the fact that they put in an inferior pipe, that they didn't check it.
And all that. Negligence. Inferior pipe is negligence.
Well, in a sense it may be, but also the fact is that they knew they had an inferior pipe, they did nothing about it. And the district's position is not that they had to do something about it. We're not saying that the city had to go out and dig up all that pipe. The because we recognize that there are fiscal concerns and public policy concerns about protecting the public purse. But when you create the circumstances that create invasions of private property and damage, you should treat that as part of your cost. When you create damage and you destroy property, the municipality should be responsible for it.
But the pipe wasn't. I'm sorry. What I was going to say, does that, the fact that you're alleging that they used the inferior pipe, does that take care of the notice requirement then, that your opposing counsel talked about?
Well, I have a point of that. The fact that they knew they had inferior pipe might address that. Frankly, I had not thought of that. The point on notice, though, that
I know that Court of Appeals apparently determined that it wasn't necessary to have notice, that notice was sufficient here, but looking at Physicians Plus, it seems to imply that you have to have either actual or constructive notice. And I'm just, when you talk about if you're using an inferior material, inferior pipe, then that's not your allegation. Is that sufficient? That's,
it could be.
But the pipe wasn't inferior at the time that it was put in, was it?
As it turns out, yes, it was. Yes, it was. And part of the problem...
Where is that correct?
That's it. In the, from our perspective, at least, and recognize that this case is on summary judgment, that's in the recognition by the former superintendent of the Water Department that prior to 1963, I think it was, ductile or whatever it was, the pipe was breaking. And then after 63, when they went to ductile pipe, they had virtually no breaks at all, and they realized that it was the tensile strength of the cast iron pipe that was the problem. Back then, basically, they knew they had a problem when they had 258 breaks a year. Now they're at 716 breaks a year.
But these pipes were put in 1926, were they not?
That's correct.
That's so correct. That the standard that was used in 1926?
Cast iron pipe was. There's a problem between spin cast iron pipe, pit cast iron pipe, and a couple of other variations off of that. We haven't established that one way or another on this. We haven't gotten quite that far.
My question would then be, the opposing counsel indicated that the pipe had an expected lifespan of 125 years or so. And what is the standard? I mean, you look at what Milwaukee has, and they had 200 breaks back in 63. They have 700 now compared to what in Chicago they use this, or is there some industry standard? Because it's obvious that when you have hundreds of miles, maybe thousands of miles of water pipe, you're going to have some breaks. Now, the question here is, when that happens, is there liability, and what is the exposure? In other words, that's what I'm talking about, notice. So if you have 700 breaks, is that something that, again, is the monitoring, the lack of monitoring or whatever, that all takes, in my opinion, goes into the area of notice.
I agree with you, Your Honor. I candidly must acknowledge that we had not looked at it quite that way, but yes, I agree with you. I think you're right on that. Because we have to remember the law in this state is pretty clear that just because something is constructed to the standard and best technology at the time does not keep it from being a nuisance. This court early on decided that in Jost versus Fairyland Power, and there have been a number of other cases in which we've identified that.
Is it negligence then to keep it? Were those nuisance cases based on negligence? Nuisance cases is generally based on negligence or strict liability, right?
It could be intentional.
Or intentional, I'm sorry, those are the three.
Yeah, it could be intentional also.
Do you have to have some grounds in the nuisance case? That is, you have to get into one of those three categories.
Yes. I understand what you're saying. I'm having a little trouble.
My fuss with nuisance.
I'm sorry?
Why fuss with nuisance? Why don't we just talk about negligence here? Isn't this a negligence nuisance case?
We pleaded it as nuisance we were not required to make an election in the trial court prior to the motion for summary judgment, and we have not made that election, although it has been treated as such by the courts.
It's what treated as news and news.
Yes. Yes.
Well, if you haven't made the election, then if the city could possibly win on even negligence or nuisance or strict liability, you'd lose, at least at this stage for summary judgment, because they would have stated a cause of action.
I don't think I'm
understanding. Okay.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to.
Right. My point is, this is a negligence nuisance case that's been treated that way. Right.
Been treated that way, yes.
All right. And you are in summary judgment.
Yes.
And summary judgment was granted.
Yes.
Now, suppose we just say it's not a negligence case at all, it's strict liability.
Yes.
Can you still win on summary judgment?
Back at the trial court. Or did
not here. We can give you summary judgment. We review the record in the same manner as the trial court does.
You know, you could. I think it's within your power. I don't know that you would necessarily exercise your power that way in this particular case, because I think you may want to benefit from a jury and having testimony and thrashing out of different views. But you could. You have the authority to do that.
Do you want a jury trial?
There's a jury demand in this, sir.
There's what?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I am wrong. There is no jury demand.
So you're on summary judgment. You want to win on summary judgment. You want a trial.
I'm sorry. I want a trial. Yes.
You want a
trial. We want a trial. I'm sorry. I misspoke.
Mr. Peterson, I wonder if you could give me sort of a bigger picture of what the suit is about and what the implications are for the parties. Does the commission vote on whether to authorize a suit like this?
Yes.
And the majority of the commission is appointed by the mayor of Milwaukee?
Yes.
So at least a number of people appointed by the mayor of Milwaukee voted to sue the city of Milwaukee.
That was brought to the commission's attention, and I don't know if I was not privy to that, how that decision was made.
Well, how would potential outcomes in this case affect the parties in other litigation?
In other litigation? Well, let's put it this way, Your Honor, and I think this addresses your point. Can the district live with the rule it's seeking to apply against the city? And the answer is yes, we do it every day. That's what the own is in the craw of the commission.
What do you do every day? When
we have a situation where the district creates a nuisance, we meet our obligation and we pay for the damage.
Counsel, can I ask, just so I understand, you said that you want a trial. I thought this is here on summary judgment.
I can bring the summary judgment.
He lost.
You lost. Yes.
Use the
issue. Yeah. Okay.
When I look at this case, for me, it's easiest to analyze it in two parts. The first part being, is there a nuisance? And we are here on summary judgment. And in order to have a nuisance, you have the burden of showing this was an ongoing leak. It wasn't a sudden rupture, correct? But most of the fighting...
I think, Your Honor, if I may disagree, I believe the nuisance is established by the invasion that destroys the peaceful enjoyment and use of the property.
So you're saying if this was a brand new pipe, and the pipe ruptured and did the same damage, no problems at all with the pipe before, that's a nuisance?
It might be.
It might be. All right. Okay, well, that's a little bit different than I've looked at. I've looked at nuisance requiring a continuing condition which causes a danger of harm or injury. You don't think it's required that the commission be continuing. So you put it that way.
Well, Your Honor, when we first got the fact situation in this case, before we started doing some of our discovery, we didn't know an awful lot at the time. And in response to your question about the new pipe, it may depend on what was the causation for the pipe to explode. I mean, if it was a negligent installation by a contractor, perhaps it's a contractor problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes there are many causes for the loss.
Can you give me the site for a case where there's a single occurrence event and it's a nuisance? Doesn't happen more than once, just once, and it's a nuisance. Any case that has those kind of paths?
And Your Honor, I did not look for one.
So what about your own? You said you handle this sort of stuff every day. And I haven't read this case, but I mean, there's a case cited in the jury instructions that I read to opposing counsel, Madison Metropolitan Sewage District.
Versus committee.
I can't find the rest of the site. But it deals with damage to riparian borders resulting from the operation of a sewage system. Well, that's in Madison. That's not Milwaukee. But conceivably, that kind of a case could deal with a burst of damage to riparian borders. And I don't know if you have a case similar to that. I don't mean Milwaukee, but in answer to Justice Robinson, is there any case that deals with a rupture that is a one-time thing that gives damage to riparian owners that's considered a nuisance?
It's a lot of years since I've read that case. I confess I've read it, but I think I've forgotten most of the facts.
I confess I haven't read it, so I don't know the facts. It just looks like some.
Could I pursue? Do I understand you to say that if the district were accused of a nuisance, it would not be asserting the governmental immunity?
Well, it depends on what the loss is, Your Honor. Right? If what the cause was a nuisance, the allegation is nuisance, and it was a nuisance, and that takes a certain amount of investigation, stuff like that, we pony up. Now, you've got to remember, the sewage district is dealing with sewers, and sewers have a slightly different nuisance analysis as the many cases that this court has seen from the lower courts. It's prevalent, and primarily sewers are designed to meet certain, for example, if it's a storm sewer, it's a design of a storm event. If it meets that storm event, then you've done your duty and it's not a nuisance that a bigger storm comes along. Because in that circumstance, it's something beyond the sewage district. It's beyond the sewer authority.
Suppose it leaks.
I'm sorry?
Storm sewer leaks. Don't they leak, do they?
Yes, they do.
Okay, so suppose a storm sewer leaks, and you get the same case as you have here. You flood water, sewer water, or storm water.
Not really. Because once the sewer is full, it is full. And it is carrying the volume that it was intended to carry. The problem is there's no place for it to go at the downstream end, and that's the problem with nature. And many times when the rain's at the upper end,
that's like back up into my yard.
Anytime you have water rushing downhill into a quiescent body or a full body, there is a damming effect, and you can have some surcharging, no doubt about it. And that's where Welsh versus City of Appleton, may be on some slippery ground. Because in that case, they had built an outlet pipe that was turned directly towards the building that was destroyed. But it was decided consistent with other cases of the Court of Appeals. But I'm not trying to argue that case. I'm not trying to get around that case. But we're kind of a little bit off.
We're off because the question is, in essence, why might, if you hold the city liable for its moves, aren't you, the next case, they're going to use this again,
Yes.
So maybe this is a case that you don't want to get, you don't want to win. I mean, I'm stating Justice Prosser's. Yeah, I think he might be leading. Doesn't mean he's leading there. But to the extent that any time a municipality loses immunity, or the concept of immunity, you're in danger.
Yes. I understand that. But on the other hand, Justice, and I think this is an important thing to understand, just because we're the government doesn't have the right to destroy property of others with impunity. And I think that's an important concept.
Mr. Peterson, what is the amount that you're asking for in terms of damages?
$100,000.
And does the record reflect that that's the amount of damages sustained by the sewage district?
I don't know if we put that in the record or not. I'd have to ask my opposing counsel, because my recollection is that there's something to that effect, but I don't know.
This leads me back to the distinction you drew earlier, saying that this was a private nuisance because you were the folks, the sewage district, that was subjected to this problem. If there's $700,000 in damages, don't you pass that on to the taxpaying public?
Yes, Your Honor.
Does it become public then, in the sense that it has a real effect on members of the public at large?
Yes. The important distinction there is the sewer that was knocked out was providing good and valuable service at the time it was knocked out. The tax allocations that were given to the sewage district for operating purposes during that particular year were identified for other purposes that had to be changed. And as a result, the sewage district has to allocate that. With some what it wanted to do to fix this particular problem. And that is a difference than what the damage the general public had. Although it may be taxpayers paying for it, and in that sense it is public. The reality is that the harm is the sewage district's harm. And that's different than the people who further run down that block further down 40th Street. They noticed no difference in their sewage service. Other people, blocks and miles away in that drainage basin, noticed no difference. They flushed their toilets and it disappeared. Miller Brewery put its waste into the pipe and it disappeared. And that's what they were looking for. So that's why we say the harm is particular to the sewage district.
It didn't interfere with their. I hate to use these terms in this case, but that didn't interfere with their activities or their enjoyment of land.
Yes, that's correct.
Counselor, if I were to disagree with the Court of Appeals and believe that before the city could be liable, there had to be notice, actual or constructive, what can you point to me in the record that would be sufficient at the summary judgment level to satisfy that obligation?
In opposition to the summary judgment?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we've already acknowledged that there was no actual knowledge.
Right.
I believe that the fact that water main was broken from 0.8 years to 2.6 years is a substantial amount of time that would constitute constructive notice. Recalling that this water main is a pressurized water main, And the fact that...
Why does that matter? Can you explain to me that? Why does it matter? It's a pressurized main, so why does that give them more constructive notice that they should have known there was a break there?
Well, they should be watching it for dips in pressure and stuff like that.
Okay. Is there something in the record that talks about that, about what happens in that room?
No.
Okay, because I'm just looking at the record for summary judgment. I want to see what I could lean on if there's anything there to show constructive notice.
I understand what you're saying, Justice. There was some discussion of that subject in one or two of the depositions.
Okay.
I did not go back, however, to make sure that those depositions were included in the motion for summary judgment that the city filed. It wasn't until we were on appeal that I realized that not all the depositions were put in.
Okay. Justice Prosser wants to talk to you.
I'm not entirely clear what your position is on when a nuisance is appears. I'll use that word. Let's say hypothetically that there are communities, it might be Milwaukee, it might be communities outside Milwaukee, that have sewer pipes that are even older than 1926. Suppose it was 1876 pipes or something like that. What, if you win this, what should these communities be doing? And when would a nuisance appear?
If I may ask for one clarification, I think you use sewer pipes, which means water means
water.
Our position would be that if that water main breaks or leaks or whatever it is, such that it invades the property of private individuals, causing them damage, that the municipality should pay for that damage. Now, is that important, the distinctions I mean? Yes, it is. 95% of water breaks present themselves at the surface. They go up. They run down the gutters into sewers and they're gone. And the municipality comes out and fixes them. Of the remaining 5%, very few result in very significant property damage. And those instances in which it does breach into a basement, the water is oftentimes taken up by floor drains with a very minimal amount of damage. It's relatively rare case where a water main breaks and destroys property, but it can, and it does, and it did. And actually, if this water main had been running underneath a railroad track, undermining, let's say, an Amtrak train, and passengers had been injured, I don't think notice would be an issue, because what happened here was the invasion of the railroad's property, causing them damage and causing significant harm.
And the facts of this case, you have affidavits that say there was some kind of a break or something happened between 0.8 and 2 point something years before that particular day. When during that time was the so-called invasion that you, is the triggering event, or was the invasion not until that